Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, January 10th, 2025. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Capturing Winter. There are two very beautiful photographs here, Capturing Winter. The top one is the sunset lights up the snowy scene at Rock Springs Conservation Area in Decatur on Wednesday, January 8th, and there's some tall, thin trees, and it looks like the sun is, well, rising or setting, but it's at the bottom of the trees, peeking through with its fierce orange light. And then there's a snowy pathway and other trees in the background. And then another picture shows Will Shade taking pictures with his new film camera, a Christmas gift, while home from college for winter break at the Rock Springs Conservation Area in Decatur on January 8th. And again, there's trees and nature's growth in the background and snow, and Will Shade with his winter coat and hat on, with his holding his camera, his film camera, a thing of the past. There's no story that accompanies this. Lawmakers seek unity in Springfield. Despite tensions, leaders strike collegial tone to start session. Since no Democrat filed to run, State Senator Chris Balkema, I'm sorry if I mispronounce his name, knew upon winning the 53rd Illinois Senate District Republican primary last March that he would eventually be heading to Springfield. To say the Chanahan Republican, the successor to retired State Senator Tom Bennett, Republican of Gibson City, was itching to get started is an Illinois understatement. So, I've got a spreadsheet right now of about 67 potential bills, Balkema said. Check back with me in a week or two because our first filing deadline is January 24th, and I'd like to narrow that down to a realistic group of bills that can actually get traction on both sides, he said. But I got a few emails this morning, so it might be 70, he said. Balkema was among the several state senators and all Illinois House members who were sworn in on Wednesday as the new Illinois General Assembly convened in the capital city for the start of its two-year run. The blank slate comes amid a cloud of uncertainty as lawmakers grapple with a projected $3.2 billion state budget deficit and potential blowback from President-elect Donald Trump's administration on topics ranging from Medicaid funding to immigration. And it also comes immediately following rancorous lame duck session that exposed tensions between Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker and some legislators within his own party, particularly in the House. Most of the 118 House members were sworn in at a ceremony on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield, while the fraction of state senators elected in November were sworn in the newly renovated Senate chambers, which had been closed for 2.5 years. The partisan breakdown in each chamber stayed the same from the last cycle, with Democrats holding a 78-40 advantage over Republicans in the House and a 40-19 in the Senate. In both chambers, leaders struck a collegial tone, though signs of frayed relationships between Democrats and Republicans lingered in the House. House Speaker Emanuel Chris Welch, who was reelected to his third term leading the chamber, tried to strike a chord of unity as he exhorted his colleagues to work together to meet the challenges of what he called a unique moment in history. The urgency of this moment shows that unity is our power, he said. Members of the 104th General Assembly, let's rise to meet this moment together. Let's use this time and all that has been given us to do the work and move Illinois forward. Winners do the work. But at the same time, he warned that there would be no home in the House for cruel and regressive policies. Always considered the more raucous chamber, There were still signs of discord, despite some of the unifying themes. Representative Steve Reich, Republican of Woodstock, spoke to nominate Republican Tony McCombie as Speaker. He said he agreed that cooperation and compromise are needed to solve the state's problems, but he also criticized people on both ends of the political spectrum for pushing ideas on which there is nothing resembling a social consensus. What results are laws that offend the heartfelt beliefs of people whose voices are not being heard, and toothless resolutions that call for us to separate the state from a world-class city that's being driven into the ground, Reich said. McCombie, who was re-elected minority leader, also vented her frustration with the state's gerrymandered maps, which all but guarantee that Democrats will maintain control of the legislature through the decade. Some of the House's most conservative members skipped the ceremony entirely, deeming it political theater. State Representatives Brad Holbrook, Republican of Shelbyville, Chris Miller, Republican of Hinesboro, Adam Nyberg, Republican of Dietrich, and Blaine Willauer, Republican of Beecher City, all members of the House Freedom Caucus, were instead sworn in at the state capitol. When families are struggling to afford groceries and to heat their homes, the last thing they want is flowery, self-congratulating speeches, Halbrook said. They want action, they want solutions, and above all, they want legislators who will put their needs first. We are sending a message that we will keep fighting for the working families of this state. Over in the Senate, the partisan discord was put aside with members of both parties expressing a spirit of collegiality. Senate President Don Harmon, Democrat of Oak Park, who was reelected to another term leading the chamber, called the body an active laboratory for coalition building. We will often disagree on how to reach our goals, Harmon said. We will often become passionate when advocating for our causes, but we will all be more productive and do more good if we remember that our political counterparts are also our neighbors. We can disagree without being disagreeable. Senate Minority Leader John Curran, Republican of Downers Grove, echoed Harmon's sentiment. We can and will disagree on policy, procedure, and just about everything else in the chamber, Curran said, but there is no disagreement that we are all here because we share in the commitment of making our state a better place for future generations. In a gesture of goodwill, the two men voted for one another for Senate President, carrying on a tradition in the upper chamber. The spirit seeped down into the rest of the chamber members. I've got to say, I value the Republican relationships I have as much as the Democrat relationships because the best legislation is bipartisan legislation, said State Senator Dave Kohler, Democrat from Peoria. And I also feel really good when we pass something that is really tough and it's bipartisan. Balkema, who shares a border with Kohler, said his number one priority is to reverse the moving trucks and get the state's population growing again. To do that, he said it's going to take a team effort. I'm going to focus on the areas where we can unify and drive the right results for the state, Balkema said. However, I will also stand firm on the principles of the residents that put me there. It's a very conservative district, and so I'm not going to compromise those principles on my voting record. Balkema is not the only new state lawmaker from central Illinois. State Representative Reagan Deering, Republican of Decatur, took office in the 88th House District, which stretches from the outskirts of Decatur to Bloomington. I ran for office because I'm scared for the future of my three kids, and I couldn't stand by while the political class ignored the struggles of everyday families, Deering said after being sworn in. Today I'm here to deliver on the promises I made to fight for ordinary families, protect our values, advance our freedoms, and ensure every child in every community has a chance to succeed. While some are new, it was not the first inauguration for many, including Kohler, who was first elected in 2006. Kohler, who had his family with him, said that the awe he feels working in the Capitol never gets old. It's always just kind of inspiring to be here, Kohler said. I just never take it for granted because it is a privilege to be elected, to represent people in your district, and they're my boss. I've never forgotten that. This is from the Capital News, Illinois. Capital News, Illinois contributed to this report by Brendan Moore at for Lee.net. Illinois company's child labor settlement okayed by Texas judge. This is from Downers Grove. Downers Grove-based Hearthside Food Solutions will pay $4.5 million to settle an Illinois child labor probe after a Texas bankruptcy judge approved a settlement between the company and the Illinois Department of Labor and Attorney General. The Illinois agencies opened their child labor probe into Hearthside, which was named in a major New York Times investigation into migrant children labor in 2023. A separate national investigation by the U.S. Department of Labor was still open as of last month. Because Hearthside filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in Texas in November, in a move it said was not primarily driven by the child labor allegations, the settlement agreed had to be approved by a bankruptcy judge before it could take effect. In a statement, when the parties first reached a settlement agreement late last year, Annie Thompson, spokesperson for the Attorney General, said that children belong in classrooms, not manufacturing facilities. We are committed to reaching a solution with Hearthside Food Solutions that protects minors from exploitation and holds the company accountable for any practices that violate Illinois labor laws, Thompson said. Hearthside did not admit wrongdoing as part of the settlement and continues to deny allegations of child labor. It has previously said the allegations were principally connected with third-party staffing agencies and has said it has already taken steps to reduce its reliance on temporary labor hired from such staffing agencies. Hearthside looks forward to moving the company into the future on strong footing, leaving past challenges behind and positioning the business for sustained growth, it said in a statement in December. Up to half of the $4.5 million settlement fund will be set aside for people who say they worked for Hearthside in Illinois while under age 16 and who can provide documentation to support their claim. The agreement also requires Hearthside to submit to additional state oversight over the length of the agreement, which is 2 years. The company agreed to submit it to audits by the state, for instance, and must open an anonymous hotline for employees to report alleged child labor violations. The approval of the agreement comes days after a refresh to Illinois' child labor law, which, among other provisions, increases penalties for violators of the law, took effect January 1st. The move also comes as some other states, including neighboring Iowa, have moved to weaken their own child labor laws. And the photo that accompanies this article, showing people walking outside the Hearthside Food Solutions facility in Romeoville on March 28, 2023, and it's a bird's-eye view of the company and the parking lot with people walking outside. In more local and state news, on page A3, fight between cousins leads to seizure, brain bleed, police say. A confrontation between cousins at a Decatur bowling alley led to a 34-year-old Decatur man being repeatedly punched and suffering a seizure and brain bleed, according to police. A sworn affidavit from the Decatur Police Department said it was quickly apparent to arriving officers that something was very wrong with the victim, who was having trouble remembering what had happened. Police could see he had a large bump rising on the back of his head before the victim was taken to Decatur Memorial Hospital. Once at the hospital, his condition quickly deteriorated, leading to him having a seizure and becoming incoherent and uncooperative with medical staff, said Officer Jacob Stewart, who signed the affidavit. Dr. William Yarnell advised the victim was suffering from a potentially life-threatening subdural hematoma, brain bleed, and needed to be intubated. He was transferred to Springfield Memorial Hospital for further treatment. Stewart said officers viewed surveillance video from spare time lanes and were able to watch the whole confrontation. The victim is seen in a verbal dispute with his cousin, Nicholas W. Matherly, 30, which escalates to Matherly punching the victim in the face before grabbing him in a headlock and throwing him into a chair and table. Stewart said the two men separated and were both ordered to leave by bowling alley staff and began gathering up their bowling balls. The victim stands up and appears to exchange further words with Matherly, added Stewart. Matherly then strikes him 3 times in the face and head with a closed fist. Those blows caused the victim to fall to the floor, striking the back of his head. The confrontation happened on the night of November 23rd, and the defendant was arrested November 25th. He appeared December 11th in Macon County Circuit Court, pleading not guilty to charges of aggravated battery, causing great bodily harm and aggravated battery. He also denied a charge of aggravated domestic battery. Matherly remains free on pretrial release and is due back in court for a preliminary hearing on February 24th. Measure to aid relatives of children in DCFS care sent to governor for signing. This is from Springfield. The Illinois House on Monday approved a bill aimed at making it easier for relatives of children in state care to get licensed as foster parents and receive assistance. The measure, which passed without opposition, now goes to Governor J.B. Pritzker, who has said he will sign it. "We're going to change some kids' life," said Representative Marcus Evans, a Chicago Democrat, who sponsored the bill. "This legislation represents more than just a change from our worker system, but it represents an opportunity to make a real difference in the lives of thousands of children and families and build stronger, more resilient communities across our state." Supporters of the legislation said keeping kids with family members can reduce trauma, provide a clearer path toward possible reunification with their parents, help make placements more permanent when needed, and reduce the number of children that need to be housed by the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services. That's what we're looking for, getting these children somewhere permanent, higher placement satisfaction. The list goes on and on, Evans said. About 60% of family members caring for children placed through DCFS would qualify for the financial support offered under the bill, according to the Illinois ACLU, which helped push the bill through the General Assembly. The bill had a number of opponents early last year, but after a few clarifying amendments, the bill passed unanimously in the Senate last November. Under the most recent Senate amendment, relatives would be able to file complaints that DCFS must respond to within 30 days. DCFS would also be required to update the General Assembly on progress with acquiring federal funding and making the foster application process electronic by 2026, according to the legislation. "We're going to have to keep our eye on what's going on with this bill," said Representative Stephen Reich, a Republican from Woodstock and sponsor on the bill. "We're going to have to look at it, at what DCFS is doing with it, and I do believe this is a step forward on fixing our broken child welfare system." Evans said the measure would not result in additional cost to the state. The legislation comes as DCFS has new leadership. Pritzker appointed Heidi Mueller as director of the department earlier this year, and she has been a vocal supporter of kinship care. "This bill is not a solution to every problem, but I think it's going to go a long way to give DCFS the tools to solve family issues, to increase family connections," Evans said. Other organizations that support the bill include the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, Illinois Collaboration on Youth, and Illinois National Organization for Women. And the photo that accompanies this article shows Jeanette Bird, who cares for her 2 young grandchildren through the foster system at her Berkeley home on December 16, 2024. The Illinois House on Monday, January 6, 2025, approved a bill aimed at making it easier for relatives of children in state care to get licensed as foster parents and receive assistance. And Ms. Bird is folding a quilt or a blanket near a bunk bed that's got Bluey and Bingo decals on the wall, and Bluey sheets on the bed and pillowcase. Chicago, goal of fewer homicides already faces headwinds. First week of 2025 sees 8 violent deaths. 6 shooting deaths on the south and west sides, a fatal stabbing in Little Village, and a vehicular homicide in Chicago Lawn. About a week into the new year, violence in Chicago ticked up slightly, and Mayor Brandon Johnson and police department leaders already face headwinds in their efforts to keep the city's annual homicide total under 500, with the historically violent summer months still to come. Chicago saw 8 homicides in the first 6 days of 2025, according to police in the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office. Another 28 people suffered non-fatal gunshot wounds, and 3 of them were initially listed in critical condition. 2 of the killings occurred inside a residence, and records show Chicago Police Department detectives classified both as domestic-related. A suspect was arrested and charged with murder in each case. Another man, shot last month, died of his injuries January 4th. CPD, though, will add his case to 2024's tally of homicides. Those totals are up from the first 6 days of 2024, when the city recorded 7 killings, and another 20 people were wounded by gunfire, records show. In all, January of 2024 saw Chicago 35 killings, with another 102 people shot and wounded, a substantial decrease from 2023. Most of the gunfire so far this year occurred in the neighborhood that for decades have borne the brunt of the city's violence. 2025's first fatal shooting occurred in the 1200 block of South Sawyer Avenue in North Lawndale, while the most recent happened just west of the United Center early Monday. Addressing the City Club of Chicago last month, Johnson called for the city to finish 2025 with 500 or fewer murders, a benchmark not reached since 2019. Chicago ended 2024 with 574 killings and nearly 2,200 more people shot and wounded, according to city records. Yes, we have work to do, but in 2025 we have the opportunity for the first time in over a decade to have less or fewer than 500 homicides, Johnson said. We have an opportunity for less life to be lost if we actually put in the hard work, roll up our sleeves, and not allow the narrative that comes from the outside to determine who we are as a city. We are Chicago. We have come through some of the most treacherous times, and we have been trendsetters from our inception, he said. There are reasons for optimism, too. After a nationwide spike during the COVID-19 pandemic, violent crime is trending downward in cities across the country. Chicago is no exception. A benchmark for success for me is to have no homicides, if that's possible, but we know the reality of it, Superintendent Larry Snelling previously said. When we think about lives lost, any number of deaths is unacceptable. So to reduce homicides as much as possible, that means we have to reduce shootings as much as possible. In addition to 2024's decline in homicides, the city also recorded a 7% drop in total shooting incidents and a 4% decline in the number of overall shooting victims. The department's Bureau of Detectives cleared 322 murder cases in 2024, leading to a clearance rate of 56%, Snelling previously said. You can't go into a new year with some simply old ideas. We have to have new ideas, Snelling said last month. We have to focus on what it is that we're trying to reduce. And if we're trying to reduce violent crime, the most important thing here is to get to the bottom of it, resolve it, hold those accountable who are committing those violent acts, break down crime patterns. And when we can do that, we start to see a reduction in crimes, he said. They have hints from Heloise on page 2 here, so I'll read it. Safely extend life of a tube of mascara. For many decades, I've extended the use of my tubes of mascara by 5 or 6 times. When it's too dry for use, add distilled water using 1/2 teaspoon or a full teaspoon. Then gently mix it by moving the wand up and down a few times, letting it sit overnight. Do not ever use tap water since it has natural bacteria and will eventually cause eye irritation or infection. Signed, Sarah in Missoula, Montana. Gift card sound off. Dear Heloise, sorry to be the Grinch, but I hate getting gift certificates as a gift, as Christmas or my birthday. Everyone else loves them, but to me it's a lazy way to say, no thought was put into this gift, and you're not worth the effort to shop for a gift. This past Christmas, I got several gift cards for things like an oil change and lube for my car from my brother. A friend of mine gave me a gift card for a massage. Frankly, I hate massages from a stranger. It just seems like a very intimate thing to do with another person. I don't even know. I also got a gift card for a dinner for two at a steakhouse that was shut down last year by the Department of Health. They're open again, but I still get an icky feeling every time I drive by the place. Am I being too touchy about gift cards? Even if the gift is too big, too small, out of date, or in a color I hate, at least someone put a thought to it. Show me you care. Signed, Carolyn L., Olympia, Washington. Carolyn, there are a few people who are difficult to shop for because they really don't need anything, or the person giving the gift simply doesn't know how you feel about gift cards in the first place. You can always re-gift these cards to people who need an oil change or love a massage, and some people love receiving a gift card because it allows them to make the specific selections they want. Last year, I received a gift card I couldn't use, so I donated it to a charity that works with children. They were very pleased with it. Signed, Heloise. Drastic but effective. Dear Heloise, whenever I see unavailable on my phone, I know it's someone who wants either money or private information, both of which I refuse to hand out. So whenever they call and ask for Harlan M., I tell them Harlan M. passed away 2 weeks ago. The caller usually fumbles with an apology and hangs up. It seems to be more effective than anything else I've tried. Believe me, I'm tired of all the calls I get for walk-in bathtubs, metal roofing, investment scams, and other nonsense. By telling the caller that I'm dead, I get fewer calls. Signed, Harlan M., Orem, Utah. Saving wrappings. Dear Heloise, we've always saved the beautiful, fun, and imaginative packaging decorations to use for family gifts next year. There are howls of laughter when recognizing old ornaments, snowmen, bows, and Santas, although some do become a bit bedraggled with use and age. Nevertheless, they are so dear. Also, apple boxes with dividers make great storage boxes, and the trouble is worth all the fun. We read you in the Amarillo Globe News. Signed, DW, via email. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, January 10th, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.